Yeah, like you said, goal line clearances, a lot of good play. Feisty at times, I think Arsenal's goal count is higher than Chelsea.
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
I could never see myself putting on another jersey.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Hey, welcome back. So we're going to talk some Formula One because Michael Massey, Formula One race director, became something of a household name late last year, largely owing to his part in the F1 Championship finale in Saudi Arabia and certainly in Abu Dhabi. You will remember in that race finale that under pressure from Christian Horner of Red Bull and Jonathan Wheatley of Red Bull as well, he made some choices, which we've talked about ad nauseum, and in short, helped Max Verstappen pip Lewis Hamilton to the title on the very last lap. So just to jog our collective memories, here is some of the cattle trading which went on between Massey and Toto Wolff of Mercedes. And to kick it off for Red Bull, Christian Horner did initially make the pleas, and then came their sporting director, Jonathan Wheatley, who we'll hear first.
Obviously those lap cars, you don't need to let them go right the way around and catch up with the back of the pack.
Understood.
You don't need to let them
Understood.
Go.
Just give us a sec.
And then we've got a motor race on our hands.
Understood.
No, Mikey, no, Mikey, that was so not right. Mikey, what was that? Mikey, on race control.
Go ahead, Toto.
You need to reinstate the lap before, that's not right.
Toto?
Yes?
It's called a motor race, okay?
Sorry?
We went to car racing.
Oof, Toto didn't like that. And all hell broke loose, I think, was the fallout there. Well, Michael Massey was sacked last week as part of an F1 hearing into the controversial finale. So Michael Massey has been sacked from his position as race director. Now, Christian Horner of Red Bull was on TalkSport yesterday. He was with Laura Woods and Ray Parler, and he was talking about Massey's dismissal, given his reaction to the decision.
I think that, look, it's a difficult one. It's the FIA's business. I think it's harsh. I think that he was in a very difficult position last year. We felt a lot of decisions went against us, you know, last year. And I think that, you know, when you look at what he has at his disposal in terms of resource compared to what the teams have, you know, it's such a massive, massive difference. And I think it's good to hear they're bringing in things like the VAR equivalent, and they're bringing back one of the most experienced guys, Herbie Blash. I just think there was so much pressure put on the removal of Michael that, you know, that's not right. That's, you know, that was my personal feeling.
Should the FIA look back at and review the race? They admit they got it wrong or not? Or you think, it's done.
It's done. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, he didn't actually do anything wrong.
No.
In accordance with the rules. And I think that, you know, it's a bit of a smokescreen because when you look back at that race, Mercedes had two opportunities to pit. There was a virtual safety car and then there was a safety car, and the driver was asking to pit on both times and they left him out. And that's what exposed him at the end of the race. You know, that's tactically, we got it right on the day. And
small margins.
It's those small margins.
Yeah.
So there you are. Christian Horner on TalkSport yesterday. Very happy to bring in Rebecca Clancy, who covers motor racing for the London Times and the Sunday Times. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well. Funny there when Ray Parler asked Christian should they revisit the race result, he didn't think so.
No, funny that, isn't it? Would have been the other way around, I imagine, if it hadn't been Max Verstappen who claimed his world title.
Yeah, so Michael Massey, dumped. He is the fall guy here.
Yeah, I mean, not really a surprise. And I have to say, I know Christian Horner there saying it was harsh, but I don't feel like it was harsh. I think he had to go, really. He is a very nice guy, but he wasn't the right person for the job. You know, he came in at the end of 2019. Charlie Whiting died on the eve of that season in Australia just before the race. And he was catapulted into this role that he wasn't particularly ready for. He had been learning under Charlie. He had a lot of experience, but he perhaps needed a bit longer. And with his dismissal, I have to say that it was all well and good what happened in Abu Dhabi. And actually, Christian Horner is wrong in the sense that he did make mistakes. There were two pretty clear mistakes, and they are due down to the allowing the lap cars to unlap themselves. That was wrong. And the timing of when the safety car came in as well, that was wrong as well. But superseding all of that was a regulation which says that basically the race director can read the rules however he wants. And that's eventually what happened. And that's why with this decision that the FIA made, they've got rid of Massey, but they haven't admitted any fault. They haven't admitted that any mistakes were made, because in their reading of what happened, they don't feel like there was. But Massey didn't just make mistakes in Abu Dhabi. There has been a level of inconsistency last year, which made racing really difficult to follow at times. We had the incident between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton in Brazil in that turn four, when Max Verstappen pushed Lewis Hamilton wide. He didn't get any penalty and they both went off the track. And that seemed like a clear penalty. And then in Saudi Arabia, a similar thing happened again. And Verstappen was punished that time. And Verstappen even joked after that race in Saudi Arabia how, oh, you know, it's fine in Brazil, but it's not fine here. And that level of inconsistency was hampering racing in a way, because drivers weren't sure how hard they could press, where the line was. And that was really difficult. But even going before then, we had fairly huge mistakes made in the refereeing decisions. If you look at Turkey 2020, during qualifying, it was a wet qualifying, it was a crash. And the clearing up, and there were cranes and marshals on the track. And at that moment, Massey alone made the decision to allow the second part of qualifying to go ahead. And the cars were out on track while there were marshals and a crane on track. And for anyone who's followed F1 for any amount of time, I don't need to remind you of how dangerous that is. And just looking back to the 2014 accident in Japan with George Bianchi, he crashed into a crane in wet conditions in Japan, and a year later he died from those injuries. So we take it really seriously. And with Massey's departure, you can't just look at Abu Dhabi. You have to look back over his record of those 3 years that he was officiating over Formula One. And he made enough mistakes that I think the FIA were right to get rid of him.
Okay. And do you feel the FIA drove home this decision, and no pun intended, or was this very much a Mercedes point of view? We are not going back. Lewis is not going back if Massey is still in place.
I think either way, I think Massey probably was out at the end of last year, in the sense of just last year was a mess in terms of decision making. Mercedes were heavily pushing behind the scenes for his removal, and you can understand why. But they were not alone. Quite a few of the other teams came out. No one would go on the record, but lots of chats behind the scenes saying that they wanted him gone as well. Because as I was saying, it's really confusing for teams and for the drivers when you're racing to what you think the regulations are, but there's someone sitting in race control saying, actually, this is my interpretation. And it's totally different to the 20 guys who are on the grid and all of the thousands of people working in the teams. That's really hard to race against. So they've done the right thing by getting rid of him.
Mm. He's been replaced by two men. So I think there's probably a sense that this thing had become a bit of a pressure cooker. So alternate races just to diffuse some of those heightened emotions, probably a good idea. Is there a sense that the two replacements are more experienced and more up to the job potentially?
They definitely are more experienced. One of them has just celebrated 40 years as an official, 20 years of those as a race director. And the other also has 20 years under his belt. So there definitely is a sense that this is the right way to go. When Charlie actually died, there was a feeling then that he had way too much on his plate. I mean, the race director, he's the race director, he's the track delegate, he looks after safety. It's such a huge job. There was a feeling back then that actually they needed to split the role. But then it didn't happen. And so what this has allowed, we've got a new FIA president in now, and he got voted in December, and he's come in and said, look, we do need to change things up. So we've got these two guys in. And then on top of that, they've brought in, as Christian was mentioning, this sort of VAR, the equivalent, where they'll set up a remote stewarding office in one of the offices in the FIA. I think it might be in Geneva that they're pushing towards. And that will support the race director. And so that's really important. And then on top of all of that, perhaps one of the most important things is they're getting rid of the teams being able to speak to the race director. And as you played out at the start, putting pressure on, perhaps manipulating decisions or trying to get into the head of the race director and have an influence over what they do. And so that's really important. But it has to be said, teams will still be able to speak to the race director in some form. It's not actually clear how this is going to happen yet. So it looks like Herbie Blash, who was mentioned in the bit that you just played out, He's coming back. He was Charlie's deputy. He worked for F1 forever. The long running, he's one of these urban legends almost, Herbie Blash, that he's been to more races than absolutely anybody else. And apparently there was a bit of an argument between him and Bernie Eccleston about who'd been to the most races. You know, it's one of those sort of, he's an, like a living legend within the paddock. So he's a really good addition and he's a great guy to bring back. But it seems like he will be the gatekeeper, I suppose, of messages. So teams will go into him. They will ask questions as to what's happening during a race. And then it will be Herbie's role to decide what goes on to the race director and what actually you just tell the, you know, the team principals or the sporting directors just, you know, pipe down.
I did read about some of these rule changes, like the VAR equivalent, but it is devastating news, I have to say, that those brilliant, dramatic, made-for-TV moments of Toto screaming to Michael that this is not right are gone. I mean, this is a devastating day for the sport, in my opinion. Bring them back. They were the best thing. They were the best part. It was the most dramatic sports audio available worldwide.
I honestly agree with you. And I have to say, I wonder if by bringing in the kind of the layer of Herbie, I wonder if they'll still play those radio messages to that you know, that they radio into Herbie, rather than it going straight to the race director, because the race director really should be doing other things than listening to Toto and Christian and Franz and Gunter and all of them shouting at, you know, everybody has their own agenda. And so I hope, because I agree with you, because I thought it was brilliant that they played those out, because we've had some absolutely brilliant messages played out. We didn't actually know that that was all happening behind the scenes before FIA and F1 decided to play them out. So I'm hoping to some degree we'll still get them.
Okay, I hope so. And presumably as well, I should have asked this actually at the top, I suspect you're not burying the lead on us, the decision to sack Massey hasn't made it, you know, more arguable for Mercedes that justice was not done in Abu Dhabi, therefore we're appealing Max Verstappen's win, you know, that's done, that's over, no chance.
No, I would have really buried the lead if I hadn't mentioned that. No, I mean, to be honest, Verstappen as champion was confirmed last December when all of the appeals happened. Obviously, we had the appeal straight after the race with Mercedes. And then we had those few days afterwards where they announced basically a period where they could decide if they were going to take further legal action. And on that Thursday after the race, they decided, they decided that they weren't going to go any further. And it was at that moment that Verstappen was the champion and that nothing could be done to change that. And as I said, the FIA haven't actually admitted that any mistakes were made, that there was no fault. They've found no reason to go back and look at the race and change the outcome or the results. So we are moving into this season. Lewis Hamilton is still on 7 titles and Max Verstappen is the world champion and will be racing with a 1 on his car.
How close do we think Lewis Hamilton was to walking away from the sport?
So I asked him this actually on, saw him on a Zoom call on a few days ago now. And I said to him, how much were you seriously considering retiring? And he said, look, you know, you think it at the end of every season, it's really all consuming to be a world champion, what it takes out of you, the commitments. But I have to admit, I lost a bit of faith in F1 and he was really honest about it, but I don't think it was ever a serious consideration. I think he was allowed, Mercedes, Toto Wolff, they allowed him to just go away, to go into hiding, basically. And so I don't think he ever really was going to walk away. He deals with that kind of defeat in a different way to the rest of us. You know, he said, a lot of people, this would define their career, but I won't let it define me. You know, the statement that he made to us was, if he thought I was good at the end of last season, and he's talking about how he won those three races up until Abu Dhabi, when he looked like he was out of the championship, and then he won those three races on the bounce, and particularly Brazil, where he was effectively demoted by 25 places. You know, if you thought I was good at the end of last year, wait till you see me this year. You know, his statement of intent of coming back and fighting and coming back is so strong. You know, we saw it in 2007 when he missed out on the world championship in his maiden year by a point. 2008, he was champion. We saw it in 2016 when he was fighting with Nico Rosberg, a really hostile year, really tough year for him. He lost out. 2017, he comes back, he's champion. You know, this is how he deals with it. He sees adversity as kind of motivation. And so I think he, you know, he said he lost faith. And I have no reason to doubt that, because who could blame him? But I think we'll see a very motivated Hamilton back this year.
Okay. if you think I was good before, watch me now. Are Netflix feeding in these lines? I mean, my God, I feel like that's in the trailer already.
He's had 2 months to think about them, so they're going to be good, right?
speaking of, new season, I know you're in Barcelona for testing, which I must ask you about in a moment, but new season starts in Bahrain on March the 16th. 5 days before that, season 4 Drive to Survive drops. So that's going to stoke things. You know, there are going to be things said in Drive to Survive season 4 which will bring the whole thing up once again. Did Hamilton cooperate in any great way this time around? Do we know? Was Verstappen cooperating? I think he doesn't like the way they're editing things, I know.
Yeah, so it's going to be brilliant. So the first race is Bahrain, March 20th. As you say, the Netflix documentary comes out timed perfectly before that. Max Verstappen has not been involved with the documentary last year. He said that he felt it was edited in a way that was disingenuous. He's actually now setting up his own documentary and people are following him around, and so he's kind of going out on his own. So we won't hear much from him, but Lewis Hamilton has done sit-downs with them, so we will get to hear his side of it. And I didn't really enjoy at all, actually, the first couple of series. 3 was much better. They seem to have found their feet a bit and found the proper storylines rather than just sort of inventing the ones that they had done in the first 2 series. And so I'm hoping for 4, as it's coming out, we will get some really good footage behind the scenes. I mean, every time you're in the paddock, there's sort of the sound boom that comes over you, and you know, you sort of sign your life away at the start of every year and say you can film and record whatever you want. So there's also that fear of F1 journalists sort of watching it come out, peeking through our fingers and being like, oh God, am I in it? What have I done? But I think we'll see some really good stuff from it.
So if you're having a private conversation, say with a fellow journalist, doing what journalists do, so you're giving out about your boss, can the guys get that on the sound boom and just show that to their world and everybody who's watching, and suddenly you're getting a phone call?
You become very clever at where you have certain conversations. Right, okay. Let's put it like that.
God, that's interesting. I had heard this. See, I wouldn't have known enough about F1 to know from seasons 1 and 2 to 3 if they were making up false narratives or if they were editing things, which, hang on, that was from a race 3 months before and they've put it next to this clip from 3 months after, and that's not how it all happened. How egregious was that on their part, did you feel?
It was just really annoying. Like, it was nothing, you know, it wasn't bad for the sport because obviously they did a really good job at getting people who weren't F1 fans watching it. But there was things sort of, you know, the King of Spain, it was this big rivalry between Fernando Alonso and Carlos Sainz. And I think that was season 2. And I remember watching it thinking, crikey, I've missed an entire storyline here. And there was just lots of little bits and bobs like that, which I just thought that I don't really remember that happening. And Gunter Steiner for Haas, and you know, he had this huge storyline and sort of dwarfing how big, and not to do a disservice to Haas, they're a lovely team, but doing a disservice to how big they really were in the paddock. And it was, yeah, just sort of, it felt disingenuous, the first 2 series in particular, but 3 I thought was much better.
Okay. The guy from Haas, he's the really colourful team principal, isn't he?
Very colourful language, yeah.
So he makes good TV, you know what I mean? Yeah, okay, if it's like these are the Steiner episodes, I'll kind of go along with that. But
to be fair to Netflix, in the first season, Ferrari and Mercedes didn't want anything to do with it. Yeah. They completely stepped out, didn't allow them access. And it was only when they saw the success of the first season that they said, okay, we'll do season 2 and we'll get more involved. And then Hamilton only starts doing sit-downs with them in season 3. Mm. So they've kind of, you know, with everything in life, you have to find your way in, learn what you're doing, build up some trust. And it slowly got better as they've got to know the people and who to talk to. So it has got better.
Okay, so this could be a real sweet spot here, season 4, given the drama and Hamilton's involvement and all the rest. Okay, yeah. Well, so that's the 11th is when Netflix are releasing that. So in advance of race week in Bahrain. As for Barcelona and test sessions, are you able to now tell me that Mercedes are faster than Red Bull or vice versa, or does it work like that?
I wouldn't lie to you, so I'm not going to say I can.
Okay.
No, testing is almost completely pointless from an outside point of view. It's good to come here. You get a slight understanding of the pecking order. We've probably never seen such a big regulation change in the 70 years of F1 than we have this year. So it's going to be really interesting. Mercedes and Red Bull were obviously in this huge fight last year, so there are question marks about how they're going to perform this year, because they had to keep a lot of their resources back for last year and they couldn't focus as much as they maybe would have liked on this year's car. Whereas the likes of Ferrari, McLaren, they went quite early last year, so they're on the development for this year. So we're looking to see how they are this year. And obviously McLaren won a race last year on merit, so they've been like, they're building back up to be a great team. So there's a really interesting storyline building here. You know, I think it'll be McLaren, Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes. That's who we'll be watching quite closely this week. But we don't know things like the engine modes they're running. We don't know their fuel loads. We don't know the strategies they're trying to run. They have all these big aero rates on the cars that you'll see. They've got these strange wings, and they'll paint the cars in this paint so they can see all the different, and basically the air running off the car. So we'll get a slight idea, but I absolutely wouldn't put any money on the timesheets this week.
It is such an interesting sport because, I don't personally like it, but there can be an aspect whereby one team pops up with some aerodynamic... I don't mean I don't like the sport. I mean this aspect of it. That would have been a sweeping statement. But I was going to say, some team will pop up with some aerodynamic wonder and all the others will say, well, that's illegal, but then the team will be doing remarkably well and it will feel a little bit unequal as a playing field, and you kind of think, oh, this shouldn't really be happening. It's kind of a frustrating thing, I find.
But it is an equal playing field in that sense, because all the teams got given the regulations and they've got $140 million budget. There's a budget cap in place this year, so they can only spend that much money, and they all have to interpret what they've been given. So it very much is a level playing field, and it's down to the cleverest designers, engineers, mechanics to eke out what they can get. And for F1 fans from, you know, if you were watching back in 2009, for example, I was talking to Ross Brawn last week, and he had a team back in 2009, the eponymous Brawn GP, and they went and won that championship because they arrived at the start of the year with a double diffuser. They found a loophole in the regulations, and there was big regulation changes that year. They weren't in the fight the previous year, so they put all of their focus into the 2009 car, came up with this double diffuser, and they won the championship with Jenson Button in the Drivers' Championship. And there is a bit of a sense, Ross Brawn was saying last week, that perhaps maybe not to such a great degree, but we could see something like that again this year. We could see something very different, very innovative. And we've seen all the car launches, or the livery launches, as I like to call them, since we didn't actually see any real cars. So we, even in the sort of few designs that we've seen, there are different, you can see the differences between the Ferrari and the Mercedes just by looking at them. You wouldn't need to be, you wouldn't even need to be an F1 fan. You wouldn't even need to know anything about cars. You can see the differences in these cars. So it's really interesting to see the routes that they've gone down. And it'll be really interesting to see who thinks who's done what well, because these guys will be poring over every single image. They'll have they have spy photographers. It's really interesting. You'll see them dotted all around the Barcelona track, and they'll be taking pictures of all their rivals, trying to spot any detail or any design or anything that's giving their rivals an advantage, and trying to implement that, get it back into their drawings, into their computers, putting it through the simulators, seeing if it works. So it's really clever. Like, this is a really fun, and so I like this side of it. I like the engineering side of it, and I quite like this whole part of it, and how they, you know, what they can come up with and who can be the most clever with their design. And so, for example, Red Bull have Adrian Newey. He was an absolute genius in the design world. So everyone's looking at him to see what he's come up with. So it'll be a fascinating few days, but I'm not sure about we'll get a pecking order.
And Rebecca, is this the first time there's been a capped budget and an equal playing field in those terms?
So the budget came in last year. Okay. So these regulations were actually due to come in last year, but obviously didn't because of the pandemic, and it was just too much on the teams to bring them in. So they've been pushed back a year. But the only thing that did come in was a budget cap, and that was $145 million last year, and it's come down now to $140 million. Okay. But that's the first time in the sports history that we've had one.
Okay. Well, it's all setting up for a very interesting season again, full of acrimony and complaining and drama and all the good stuff, as well as the actual races. Rebecca Clancy, motor racing correspondent for the London Times and Sunday Times, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.